You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
with your life.
Running like a red disease.
Running like a red disease. Ghetto people.
Stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, yo. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe. It simply means, so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. there's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, I hope everything is well with you today. Hope you're going to have a great weekend planned. Hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, will do. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. And I hope that the environment where you are will be accommodating for you to do it. If not, stay your ass at home. You're listening to African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, 8 to 10 Pacific, any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. And when you get on their website, look for podcasts, click on that, and then you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and then there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, this program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., and all times are going to give our Eastern times. Monday evening from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Wahad, followed by Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey at 9 p.m. Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers every Tuesday from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. And then on Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. So at 8 p.m. tonight, brother, Time for an Awakening. And then on Sunday, it's Time for an Awakening again at 7 p.m. with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the every Monday through Friday, the Warren Ballantyne Show, 10 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m. It's a recorded broadcast. It's not live. But the number to call to listen and to participate is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. That is Time for an Awakening. We Buy Black. WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses at WeBuyBlack.com. The largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses is WeBuyBlack.com. Products that are produced by us. Please support WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans, Brother Bomani Tayemba. I called him. He hasn't given me a buzz back, but I'm just going to make an assumption that his trip next month, April 3rd through the 13th, more than likely is postponed or canceled. And even the trip in May 25th, and that trip to in April 3rd to the 13th was to Senegal and Gambia. And then the trip to Ghana, May 25th to June 5th, possibly could be threatened as well. The South African trip in November 20th through November 30th, is a possibility. And then the trip into Ghana at the end of the year, December 24th to January 5th, 2021, is also a possibility, as well as next year, April 2nd through the 12th, once again in Senegal and Gambia. But I will know for sure as I continue to try to communicate with Brother Bomani Tayemba. But if you go to his website, africafortheafricans.org, everything that you're going to need to access these trips will be available to you. AfricaForTheAfrican.org. Renoko's trip is at the towards the end of the year, October 5th through the 16th, Renoko Rashidi. He's going to Uganda and Rwanda. If you go to his website, drrenoko.com, you'll see beautiful photos of Uganda and Rwanda. And also, he has a trip at the end of the month, October 22nd through November 4th of this year, going to Kemet. He's going in some beautiful photos there as well. And, of course, he has led these trips for many years, as well as Brother Bomani. So there's two times that you have, or multiple times, let me say it that way, that you have to make a trip of a lifetime to the motherland with two outstanding tour guides with great packages, and they are very affordable. Habesha. Habesha, brothers and sisters. Habesha stands for Helping Africa by Establishing Schools at Home and Abroad. Habesha Incorporated. .org. Go to HabeshaIncorporated.org. And of course, their mission as a pan-African organization that cultivates leadership in our youth and families through practical experiences in cultural education, sustainable agriculture, and entrepreneurship and holistic health and technology. Habesha. They also have a project that's going on right now in Ghana. They are building the Akashi Village. And it's supposed to be ready by the end of this year. There's pictures of the progress that they're being made in Ghana, establishing the Kashi Village. And brothers and sisters, to me, this organization should, well, everything that I've asked y'all to support, y'all should support. Because it's necessary. It is. The Shrine of Black Madonna is closed. I talked to Baba Olatunji, and the shrine is closed in Detroit, as well as Houston. I'm not sure if they have another temple or anywhere else. I'm not sure. But if they do, they're closed. And But you can still give them a contact. You can still contact them if you want to get a hold of that multimedia program, the multimedia library that they have, at 404-444-6696. 404-444-6696. It's Baba Olatunji, and he can make arrangements for you to access that multimedia library that is now 7 terabytes of African enlightenment. 7 terabytes. Sister Mama Nia is still open in the Greenbrier Mall, the Meddu bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, who has books and T-shirts and all kind of other little gifts right there in the Greenbrier Mall. Give Sister Mama Nia a call at 404-346-3263. 404-346-3263. And I talked to my good brother, Gazimde Ajamu, at the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia, and in Main Street in Lithonia. And give him a call, because he has, and if he doesn't have it, he'll get it also, too. It's a nice place to go to have coffee and sandwiches and so forth, good environment. And safe environment. So give them a call at 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. Because there is light in the black dot. He also has the red, black, and green shoes, the Nagash shoes. Give him a call. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Cooperative economics, as we like to say, family-centered economics, the Thursday night broadcast, every Thursday night at 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern. Last night, good broadcast. The number to call is 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Also, too, every Friday from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness, my good brother and friend, Brother Yusuf Muhammad, former president of the Black Firefighters, like I'm a former president of the Black Firefighters, and his program is every Friday from 4 to 6, and the number to call is 563. This is on Blog Talk Radio, Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness is 563-999-3089. That's 563-999-3089.
today at 4 p.m. Eastern. Akabin Institute, Baba Baruti and Sister Ya Baruti has been doing an outstanding job of educating our young warriors, and they need your support. Give them a call. No, excuse me. Make your check or money order out to Akabin Institute. Send it to P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. That's Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. If you want to use Cash App or PayPal, please do so. The dollar sign in Yah, Y-A-A, the letter M, and then Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I, Akabin Institute. Sanjay Dash Haiti, Sister Gabrielle Riri, Sister Gabby has been doing an outstanding job of helping our young people in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti. And she deserves to be supported because, as you know, a lot of times the rural areas in devastated countries like that, you know, it's very hard to for them to get the kind of support and necessary things that they need. And so she has established a school. If you go online to Sanjay-Haiti, Sanjay-Haiti.org, you see what I'm saying. It's a beautiful school. The kids look beautiful in their uniforms. They also, so education, healthcare, they have a healthcare program to make sure the children and the family in the village and in the area is healthy. And they have a ways of making money and sustainable agriculture. So that's Sanjay, S-O-N-J-E-Haiti, A-Y-I-T-I.org, Sanjay-Haiti.org. The Enye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. The Enye Sesim. March 26. People are easier to kill if they come from nowhere. John Edgar Wideman. We cannot stand idly by while someone else turns our sons into daughters and our daughters into their sons, as if they are formless putty to be indiscriminately molded by the sexually perverted European imagination. In order to confront this devastating process, we must realize just how truly afraid a people must be who claim to be free and self-aware, while at the same time are more willing to sell out their children to the lowest bidder. Our enemies are quite aware of the fact that once you break someone, once you separate individuals from themselves and their people, their traditions, their identity as a living being without our historical origin, they are at your whim. Prostitute, abused mate, tamed animal, prisoner of war, or homosexualized, effeminized African male, or masculinized African female. It is the same process. And this process unquestionably applies to people who allow their sons to be turned into someone else's daughters and daughters turned into someone else's sons. A person's spirit is their philosophy. It is their way. It is their source. Once you break them from their spirit, your morality or lack thereof becomes theirs. Of course, it goes without saying that as long as African people do not and want to control the institutions of our community, as well as the community which those institutions are designed to serve, we cannot complain about whatever our children are turned into, because they would have been made to come from nowhere. Affirm, my philosophy is found in my people's spirit. Affirm, my philosophy is found in my people's spirit. March 27th. A close observation of Africa and its societies will reveal that spirituality is at the root of African culture and is the determining principle of African life. It is no exaggeration, therefore, to say that in traditional Africa, spirituality is life and life is spirituality. Kofi Akopu. Africans pray consistently. Prayer is embedded in our thinking. It is how we think. It is not something we have to make a great effort or set aside a particular time to do. It is normal, natural, uneasing. True, there are points when prayer is more emphasized and intense, like doing rituals such as libation, visitations of altars and shrines and ceremonies. But African prayer is never ending. It is our indoctrination into Europeanized and Arabized African religions, which has made prayer an isolated, formalized, scheduled, regulated practice for us. Ongoing prayer keeps us consistently conscious of our thought and behavior relative to Ma'at. We naturally know what is right and what is wrong. We know that wrong brings unnecessary pain because we are deeply spiritual creatures, because we subconsciously know that we are more spirit than living matter. We understand the need to always be in contact with our higher spiritual selves. Affirm, I am conscious of prayers I consistently offer. I am conscious of prayers I continuously offer. March 28th. We're not running anything in America but our mouths, Professor Griff. If there were students from another galaxy traveling on a mission to record the presence and behavior of beings here, they might assume from looking at the residents, vehicles, clothes, places of religion and other professions and consumption practices of African people, particularly in this country, that we were a people of great power. They might even make the grave mistake of assuming that of all groups, we were exercising the most power. Of course, these are things that the aliens, in their judgment, based on the image we put on as super consumers, would probably miss. Of these, we definitely know that it would overlook the fact that most of what African people have is either rented or leased, and the credit that offers extended to us is simply another form of captivity, another form of slavery. If they knew this, they would recognize us for an insecure, powerless people we have become, although we lie to ourselves that we aren't. If they were able to look a little closer, they might even possibly conclude that we plan to get it, as well as begging for what we could easily acquire if we would just recognize that we are an African people. Reveals our deep-seated weaknesses and how we nurse our wounded esteem under goods, religion, sports, comedy, drama, and heathenistic exploits others use in controlling us. But even that knowledge will not give our visitors insight into the depths of our psychological dependence on European, the true aliens. Affirm, my economic power does not lie in someone else's pocket. Affirm, my economic power does not lie in someone else's pocket. Brothers and sisters, the Inye Sesim of daily revolutionary thought. Where am I at here, y'all? I'm trying to figure something happened to my screen. You know, that's the thing about what we have here. Looks like I've been knocked off. I don't know how that happened.
You are the first participant on this Uber conference. Please hold while we wait for the others to join.
Well, brothers and sisters, if you have called or plan to call, please do so. Somehow I got knocked off. You know, that's the thing about the technology. It's not certain. You know, it's been consistent, particularly since I got new equipment and I've been on this particular format. It's been pretty consistent, and so I'm hoping that people call back. So I hope that's the case. So yes, we do. We have our guest, Sister Jaliwa.
Jaliwa, yes,
Sister Jaliwa, how are you? This is Baba Oshi. You're on African Perspectives.
I had a little technical difficulty. I hope that wasn't too big of a problem. And
thank you. No problem.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. We're going to talk about our sister who was incarcerated, and and that's Dr. Ascari, Dr. Ascari. Mm-hmm. And so give us a little bit of background, because even though I know our program today is brief, it's only a half an hour, and I want to do a larger program and invite you back and some others to talk about brothers and sisters who have been involved in holistic health and holistic healing, and who are also medical doctors who have an MD or a doctorate in whatever. And yet those people, and some of them, not just in prison, some of them have been killed. So we want to talk about that. So give us a little background about Dr. Ascari.
So Dr. Ascari, you know, has always been committed to the African community, even as a little girl. I'm actually her sister. Yeah. So she, we were raised in an environment where we were always taught to love ourselves and our people and be community activists. Our parents were community activists as well. So Dr. Ascari, in an effort to, you know, help the African-American community and the world in general, she, you know, decided to become a doctor. However, she made no apology about being Black, about being loving Africa, about loving African people. And from that point on, she was one of those physicians that, you know, she was not against vaccines, but she was for safe vaccines. Mm-hmm. She hadn't found mm-hmm. any, so she did not vaccinate children.
Yeah.
And, you know, with Big Pharma, that's a big, bold statement.
Right.
And so she was a holistic practitioner. You would not normally walk in her office and walk out with necessarily a regular prescription, but you might walk out being told to, you know, cut back on sugar, which we know is a drug.
Sure.
You might be told to, you know, limit your dairy intake, you know. So she wasn't your typical doctor. She was actually what I call the best of both worlds. She was holistic, allopathic practitioner.
Ashe.
So, you know, in that instance, you know, they had it out for her, as they did, like you said in the beginning of your statement, as they did for most of our holistic practitioners, but especially those who had a commitment to Africa or African people. So Dr. Ascari, you know, she did work at a pain management clinic, and, you know, her thing was to get the patients, you know, to begin to wean themselves off of things, but in the interim, you can't just not prescribe anything.
Right.
So, you know, in her effort to, you know, to do that, she did prescribe some things. There were 12 doctors at the clinic. There were only two holistic practitioners who had a connection to Africa. Those were the only two practitioners who were indicted, charged, and imprisoned.
That's no coincidence.
By no coincidence, by no accident.
Exactly.
Dr. Ascari was given 66 months in the federal prison. On the day of her sentencing hearing, over 400 people showed up. The judge was so amazed, he left the doors open to the courtroom. He said he had never seen anything like it in his life. In addition to that, the prosecuting attorney, the district attorney, the prosecutor came in. Her first statement was, "Your Honor, the lobby is full. Dr. Ascari is the only person in this case who has been forthcoming and honest." And she was still charged and convicted. Well, I guess when she took a plea deal, because, you know, with the federal government, they threaten you to death.
Right.
You know, they tell you that, you know, if you don't take a plea, you're facing 20 years.
Sure.
Dr. Spark was 62 years old. I have a sister that was, I had a sister that was 80 years old.
Okay.
Since Dr. Scar has been in prison, one of my brothers has passed. He was 76 years old.
Mm.
And so, you know, the thought of you not seeing your loved ones again, you know, it's frightening.
It is. It hurts.
And, you know, and so, you know, she's a political prisoner. Make no mistake about it.
Mm-hmm.
She's housed in the Coleman facility, which has already been exposed to the Legionnaires' disease.
Where is that at?
Now,
where is she being?
Coleman, Florida.
Coleman, Florida. Okay.
Yeah. And it's a camp. Mm-hmm. And so there are women there, you know, non-violent offenders, you know. Dr. Scari is now 64 years old. She's been there 2 years. Prior to her getting to Coleman, she was at the Mariana camp in Mariana, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And they were struck by Hurricane Michael with the inmates in the building. So she's been through some traumatic stuff.
Yes, she has.
You know, yeah. And the roof was torn off, the place caught on fire, then they had to evacuate the prisoners. They didn't evacuate them when they knew that their camp was in the direct path of Hurricane Michael. So, you know, she's gone from that to Legionnaire's disease, now to COVID.
Yeah. And that's a good possibility.
She was not given a death sentence.
Yeah, exactly, you know? Exactly. How is her spirit? When's the last time you have contact with her?
Well, we try to email every day. Of course, I'm in a panic if I don't hear from her on some days. But so far, Dr. Scari is a warrior. I'm here to tell you guys. She is a serious warrior. She, you know, is her spirits are up. I'll tell you the character of Dr. Scari. Dr. Scari slipped and fell while she was at Coleman. And it took us months. I mean, I had to call down to the federal, to D.C., you know, demanding that she get to see an orthopedic specialist. Mm-hmm. She demanded to get her MRI done. And finally, all that was done. And her knee is jacked up, torn, you know, things torn in her knee and all that at 64 years old. And another lady fell and she was knocked unconscious and they took that lady to the hospital. When that lady came back, Dr. Scari gave that lady her wheelchair because she felt like the doctor was in that person was in worse shape than her. Mm. And then Dr. Scari resorted to using crutches. That's the kind of person that we're talking about.
Wow.
She's selfless. I mean, she is really
beautiful. Yeah.
Selfless.
That's beautiful.
So, you know, we're doing everything we can. We have a petition going around. We now are up to, I think, 788 signatures. We're trying to get 1,000. And it's circulating on Facebook. Unfortunately, I don't know how to forward it to anybody.
Okay. Well, what I'll do is I'll announce it at every broadcast. And if I can talk to you how the listeners can access it for whether they go online, I mean, of course online, but whether they go to, you know, whatever it is, how they can do it to sign that petition so we can make sure that this country knows that a sister like her and all that she has done should not be imprisoned because she wants to help her people, you know.
Right.
But we also too know that we're in America.
Absolutely.
And America has always shown their disdain and distaste for African people, particularly for those who want to be independent, who want to be outside of the dictates and imposed boundaries that the European has placed upon us. So, and they want to make an example of that. So we want to fight and we want to fight to help this sister get out of the situation that she's in. That's for sure. You know, and what's interesting is like I said, I want to do a broader program of many holistic healers who have been imprisoned, who have been discredited, who have been humiliated, and who have been killed, you know, for trying to bring, because here in America, they don't want to cure nothing. They don't want to cure a damn thing. They just want to treat it because this is capitalism. And capitalism, that's why to me, when Barack Obama talked about even before he went into the Affordable Health Care Act, but he was talking about universal health care, which, of course, a lot of countries have, you know, where health care is a right. A lot of countries, particularly Western countries, all throughout Europe, Japan, you know, it doesn't cost you universal health care. Well, of course, it wasn't going to fly here because of capitalism. I mean, when you look at the amount of money that the insurance companies make, you know, and I tell you, they make a lot of money. The CEO of insurance companies make anywhere between $2 to $3 to $6 million a year. Now, I'm a former firefighter in the city of Milwaukee as a public employee, and a lot of public municipalities have United Healthcare. At that time, the CEO of United Healthcare was making $66 million a year.
Wow.
A year. And now, wow, just the latest I heard, he was making 80-something million dollars a year. United, because a lot of new municipalities have United Healthcare, you see.
Right.
And so I had both of my knees replaced because they were really worn out, you know, from a number of things, from firefighting, sports that I engage in, coaching football, all of these things, refereeing. And so I definitely needed it because I was bone on bone. I was in pain. So anyway, I'm going through the rehab and my orthopedic doctor, as well as my therapist, wrote to the and talked to the people at United Healthcare, and later they denied me additional therapy because I had them both replaced at the same time. And I'm saying to myself, they're going to deny me. And I had paid because, you know, there was a deductible that I had to pay anyway. And I paid the deductible, you know, but they're going to deny me the care while this man made $66 million.
Wow.
You know, see, so I mean, there is no empathy and sympathy for people. They don't give a damn. In fact, once again, they don't want people cured. They want people to continue to pay for these treatments.
Right. And unfortunately, we can't even use the term, oh my, that's unbelievable, because it's very believable.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
It's very believable.
Well, Sister Jalee, we have some callers. Let's see if they want to say a little something.
Okay.
Sister E, the E5 family. Sister E, hello? You're on the line. There's not a number, Atlanta, E5 family. Maybe they just want to listen. Okay. 404-404-697. Good morning. Okay, another one who just wants to listen, and that's perfectly fine. Okay. And let's see. Sister Ikeena, good morning. Maybe she just wants to listen too. Okay. And there's no problem with people who just want to listen. I know for various reasons, but, and that's great. But, you know, Dr. Africa just passed, you know.
Right. Yes. I heard that. Yeah. And that's sad to hear that.
Yes. And, you know, and the work that he has done along with the work that Dr. Sabi did. And of course, you know, they killed Dr. Sabi. In fact, Dr. Sabi said that when you came up with cures for AIDS and cures for all these other things, that you were going to be killed. His mother told him that. You're going to be killed, you know. And so he was coming back from going back to Honduras from the States. And from my understanding, when he would make presentations, he would take cash, you know. He would take cash, and then he and his assistant would bring in his cash back, and they stopped him, and then they imprisoned him, and then next thing you know, he's dead, you know.
Wow.
So, you know, so they killed Dr. Sip. Like I'm saying, that there's a history, and I'm going to research, and I hope that you can come back, and we can talk about this for the show's entirety, which is, you know, 2 hours, actually an hour and a half, and and get a lot of calls and publicize this, because the community needs to know. The community needs to know what's going on. The community definitely needs to know what is happening, you know, to your sister, you know, and the fact that they have her in prison for what, almost 6 years. She has a 6 year. That's crazy. That's crazy. You know, but once again, when you look at this society and what it's about, you see some people who have done heinous things get a lot less time than that.
Right. Know? Absolutely.
And here, because, I mean, you know, having been a person who has had pneumonia a number of times, I'm very fearful. I'm not scared. I'm very concerned. Right. I think that's my more appropriate word. I'm concerned and very aware of what's happening with the COVID-19 virus, you know. Mm-hmm. And in fact, two of the people in Milwaukee who died, the first two people were two brothers, and I knew them both very well.
Wow.
One was a classmate of mine, and fellow firefighter who went off on duty, disability, and he had a health challenge. I've been here in Atlanta now almost 6 years, and about a few years ago, he had a health challenge, and come to find out, it was his heart, and so he overcame that. But on the local news in Milwaukee, they did a feature on him, and his and were talking to his son, and his son said that his father became ill, and then when he went to the hospital, he was dead in 2 days.
Wow.
He was dead in 2 days. And then the other brother, who was a police officer, he was president of the Black Police Officers Association the same time I was president of the Black Firefighters Association. And we worked pretty well together, knew him very well. And when he retired from the police department, he went and got a doctorate degree and did some teaching, and then was also appointed to the parole board. And then he moved, him and his wife is a former police officer as well, moved down to Mississippi, I believe it was. But he came back to Milwaukee to check on property and some tax issues. And then he got sick. And he was dead within a couple of days. So seeing that my I have, you know, a precondition of pneumonia, which, of course, this virus is, you know, I'm very aware of what I definitely need to do. I can't get this virus, because if I get this virus, yeah, you know. So there are some things that are out there in the atmosphere. And even at that, getting back to Barack Obama's, when he was promoting universal health care. But even though he didn't get it and he got the Affordable Health Care Act, I've never called it Obamacare. The Affordable Health Care Act, which is really not affordable. Because what the Affordable Health Care Act was, an insurance program, just like Mitt Romney. It's an insurance program, and it takes everybody to pay into it to keep the premiums low. And so once young people stop paying into it, you know, those premiums skyrocketed. And some people who had a loved one who had a condition, they were paying, I remember this one guy was paying $1,500 a month. His wife had cancer, $1,500 a month. And so the Affordable Health Care Act was not affordable, you know? And then, but even at that, Sister Jaliwa, to me, once you put a health care plan into the society, then you must put preventions to make the health care program work for the people,
i.e.
a diet, environment, and so forth. And yet, because see, to me, if you have a health care plan, but you're still eating bad, you're smoking, you're doing all these things, you know, it's not going to work. See? And so really, in this society, which has commercials, which has areas in major cities, in particularly in our community, that are like food deserts, and loaded with fast food and the promotion of fast food, you know. But one could argue, say, well, it's a cycle that it's an economic cycle that needs to be maintained, you know.
Right.
So doctors will get paid and the hospitals will get paid. You know, the pharmaceutical companies will get paid. Everybody getting paid. But the hell.
So that's one, you know, that's one of the things, you know, even with Dr. Ascari, you know, she, you know, had a saying, I'll never forget it. We were at Thanksgiving and, you know, some of my family members were talking about their children, especially their sons, who had what they call, or what other people call, behavioral problems. And, you know, she started questioning them about their diet. And as she heard more about the fast food they were eating, she told them, she said, I have a challenge for you. She said, I want you to put a French fry in the back of your car, just one fry from any fast food restaurant. She said, go back 3 months later and look at that fry.
It looks the same.
She said, it's going to look exactly the same as it did when you put it in there. She said, you know why? She said, no respectable bacteria will touch it. We fell out laughing, even though it's not funny. It's
no,
true.
But it's true.
But she made it real simple and plain.
Yeah.
She made it very simple and very plain.
Yeah.
That we have to be conscious of what we're putting in our body, including the lotions, the perfume, all of that. We have to be very careful about what we're consuming. And so, you know, that was another, it wasn't a secret. you know, as we heard, as I read the depositions, I saw all the people that, you know, came to their clinic, and one undercover agent came to the clinic. And when he was giving his testimony, he described the muscle testing that Dr. Ascari did for, you know, to find out what your allergies were, to find out, you know, what kind of shape you were in. He didn't understand it. But what he described was the holistic part of her examination for him. And so, you know, he's undercover, but he left trying to figure out, you know, you know what's going on. And she talked about, you know, our need to be in the sun.
Right.
You know, and I heard you've heard a lot of about that. You know, our need to be in the sun. You know, you want to make sure that you get sunlight, that you're not in the house all day long. You're not, you know, just sitting around. And you want to be a whole person. And, you know, even myself with that insurance and affordable care that you were talking about, my premiums were $75 a month. Sure, I could afford that.
Okay.
The following year, they were $975 a month.
You can't afford that.
I am now one of those. Absolutely. I'm now one of those uninsured Americans.
See?
Yeah.
So, you know, this society, European society, you know, is something that unfortunately is not geared towards overall health of human beings. It is an evil, exploitative society. It wants you to get sick. It wants you to consistently pay in to the hospital, the doctor, the pharmaceutical companies and so forth. It's not conducive to human growth. European society, particularly as it relates to African people, is not good for us, but yet we're in it. And when we do alternative things, such as what Dr. Sky has done, you get in prison, letting you know that we don't want you to get better. We don't want you to do things outside of us, particularly promoting to a wide range of your people, you know?
Right.
So we have another caller, Sister Akina.
Yes, greetings, Sister Jaliwa. Thank you so much for bringing this to our attention. And thank you, Baba Oshi, for airing this. I did want to share with people how they can sign that petition.
Oh, wonderful.
Okay. So when you go online, put in www.thepetitionsite.com.
Okay, let me try to write this down.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, Akina, when the program's over, I'll get with you so I can get this information so I can consistently broadcast this and talk about this. And then we'll schedule that longer program and talk about
it. And sister, that site is spelled S-I-T-E?
Yes, the petition site, and it's all one word, thepetitionsite.com.
Okay, great.
And when you get to the site, you go to the search bar and put in Dr. Ascari.
Okay, that's wonderful. I'm going to do that as soon as we hang up.
yes. And you know, and I know I put it on my page. Many people are putting it on their social media pages, and we ask people to click it. You know, sometimes we see things and we just scroll past, and we assume that there's others who are taking care of that, you know, and putting it in motion. But the truth is, we are the others.
That's right.
You know, this is the call to action for all of us. Even if Dr. Ascari was not your personal doctor, she was my personal physician. And I'm just thankful, grateful, and appreciative that she was available because I'm a person that I can't take regular pharmaceutical drugs, you know. Mm-hmm. And thank God for Dr. Ascari that she has the knowledge and the wisdom to treat people based on their specific needs. It's not just a rollout of standard procedure.
Exactly. You know?
So this is a woman, an elder, that we have got to get her released. And I know that the family and the attorneys have been working on it diligently from the day it happened. But we're at a crucial point right now where each one of us, whether we were her patients or not, if we are loving members of this community,
right.
I just implore us to sign that petition and stay on top of this, because it's just like, you know, when a car needs to be pushed, you cannot just let one person push the car. All of us have to get out there and move it into safety. And that's what we're
right.
talking about. We have all got to get behind this. And it doesn't take a lot of time to sign that petition at all.
Right.
And,
wow.
it's, and it doesn't ask you for money. So
that's
when
right.
you see it online, we just want to assure people that only all that's being asked is for you to put a digital signature onto that petition so the family and the attorneys can move forward with this effort, because it should have never happened. It's an injustice that she is in prison. We know that part, but we cannot go back in time, but we can move forward with swiftness, with force. And part of this is what we're asking everyone to do. Sign the petition. You know, having more numbers is better than just reaching the target.
Exactly.
So, absolutely.
Exactly.
And we want to go beyond that. Like you mentioned how the day in court, you know, when with seeing all those folks showing up. So it's mm-hmm. the same thing.
Were you,
you know,
there that day?
No, I couldn't be there
oh.
that day.
Oh, okay.
But I was.
Okay.
I certainly had just like this case of making sure that we spread awareness.
Absolutely.
To,
absolutely.
We hosted the sessions at the Uplifting Us site, Cafe Ulu. So
we
had gatherings there, and I was present for that.
And we were very thankful for that, too. Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Oh, yes, yes. I mean, it was all that we can do as a community. We need to do it, whatever, wherever you are, to do it. And right now, with this coronavirus having us all self-quarantined into our house, and most of us have access to getting online, you know, you can do it on your phone, you can do it on your laptop, on your computer, but please, if you would, sign that, lest like in this next hour, we should be able to hit the target and exceed the target of signatures
right.
that are needed.
Yes.
And many of my friends have, and if they're listening now, I want to say thank you to my Facebook friends and my friends in the reality realm, everyone who has signed. Please forward it to your page and ask people to do it. Let them know. This is real. This is not an old story. This is today,
right.
2020.
Right.
It's real, and we right. have to get our beautiful elder sister out.
There's no
yeah.
doubt
and
about it.
And I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I have gotten quite a few calls from my friends and some of Dr. Ascari's associates who thought it was a hoax and that it was from a long time ago. So, you know, I said, no, this is real. This is right now. And so then they go, you know, they signed it and they shared it. And yeah, so you're I'm glad that you mentioned this is right now, 2020, March the 27th.
That's
you know,
right.
we need that done today. Absolutely. Thank you, sister.
And see, you're because welcome. This is very important to keep this issue in the forefront, because it says that you can only practice, or you can only do what we say you can do. And
right.
you know, as opposed to saying or doing something that would be more beneficial, more holistic for you from a health standpoint. No, we're not. We don't want you to do that. We want you to buy our medications. We want you to be
right.
sick to consistently so we can continue to make money off you. And so my contention is everybody needs to sign this. We need to make sure that we exceed hundreds of thousands of people, if not a million people or more. Signing this petition to get this sister out of prison, and anybody else who has done the same thing that she has done, who has been incarcerated, you know. So this is a national issue, as far as I'm concerned. This is a national
right.
issue, and so I'm not sure who her legal team is, but she needs a stronger legal team, because she needs to be out. And those brothers and sisters who have been threatened or who are in prison, who have been practicing holistic health, even though they are a medical doctor and have been trying to be dictated to by administering pharmaceutical drugs or vaccines, you know, because I know, and you know, I saw Bill Gates on the TV last night. And of course, he's part of the eugenics movement. He's been pushing vaccines for decades. He's part of that group that wants to depopulate the planet, and particularly depopulate, illuminate us on the planet. But they're going to push that, and it's going to be something that they're going to try to make mandatory for people to say that if you got to take this vaccine to stop the spread of COVID-19, and it's not happening. It's sure ain't happening with me, you know. So,
yes, sir.
Well, Sister Jaliwa, I want to thank you for taking this time. I know you said that you were pretty busy, and I appreciate this time. I want to talk with you and talk with Sister Akina to put together a program on this forum to talk specifically about what Sister Skye is going to and what other holistic health practitioners have gone through, and the fact that they are always under attack from a capitalistic, evil capitalistic society that does not want people to be healthy, that would rather for them to be sick and to be maintained to be sick so they can just consistently make their money. So any closing remarks, my sister?
Well, we appreciate your platform, and we applaud you for, you know, putting yourself in the forefront. We know this is no easy task, even with, you know, our enemy and even with our own people. We know it's no easy task. And, you know, anything that we can do to, you know, help you to move forward, we're here for you. All of our time is limited, but we just have to make time for each other and do everything that we can. Dr. Ascari, thanks you. She is always, you know, willing to be, you know, one of the people who will be an example for us to, you know, imitate, and for us to, you know, look forward to having her out back,
yes,
you know,
helping
our people to be healthy. So we thank you again. And, you know, Dr. Sanyika was the one that, you know, told me about your platform. And so she has been one of the forerunners. I mean, she's a serious warrior. I just have to make sure that you guys know, if Dr. Sanyika is asking you to do anything, she is definitely I'm going to call her the president of this forum for Dr. Ascari, because she is definitely one of the people who has been in the forefront of this movement to get Dr. Ascari released.
Well,
so if you hear anything from her, you know, I want everybody to know that it is legitimate. It is genuine.
Well, being a doctor, she's definitely busy at this time, but we would like to get her. I like to talk with her myself, but we want to make sure that this is in the forefront of what's happening right now. We're going to put this on the forefront, you know, and whatever I can do, I'm willing to do. You're welcome. More than honored, my sister. Believe me, I am. Sister Akina, you have any closing remarks? Sister Akina? Okay. She's taking care of the children. All right, sister. I thank you so much. Appreciate it very much.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Peace, my sister.
All right. Peace.
Brothers and sisters, this is very serious. The petition I'll be announcing every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and keeping track of that. We want to get Dr. Skye out. She doesn't deserve to be in prison for 6 years because she said, no, you shouldn't take vaccines. Y'all know it. So we can't let it happen. We all must sign this petition. I don't give a damn if you Republican, Democrat, Independent, African, or Black. We got to sign this petition, get this sister out. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back with Sister Asmira H.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
everything I can think about, babe. Dreaming last night like a man that has something to prove. I dream about me a jet black babe, 'cause I think about life like that, sugar. Keeping my love on track, baby.
Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Welcome back. I have my guests for the next hour program. I want to thank Sister Jaliwa, whose sister, Dr. Askari, is in prison in Florida, and definitely Sister Ikena. I'll be working with Sister Ikena to develop a program, an ongoing program, to make everybody should be aware of what's happened to this sister. And a serious outcry needs to happen, you know, to get her out of prison. 6 years? You know,
You know, I always say, brothers and sisters, I don't hate anybody. You know, but I hate the system that white folks, Europeans, Caucasians have created. And within that system, I hate what has happened to us, how we behave, how we are trained to hate one another, to disrespect one another. I hate it with a passion. I have a good friend, a sister who I've known for a number of years and who I've always been impressed by, the activities that she has been involved in, the things that she has done. I can't say enough. Brothers and sisters, let me introduce you to Sister Asmira H. She is somebody who has literally traveled the world and have a huge impact, and she's now working out of D.C. Sister, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Good afternoon. Oshie, how are you? Can you hear me all right?
I can hear you fantastic, and I'm quite sure if I can, I hope my listeners can. So this is Women's Month, and I played that song, My Blackness, because it speaks to the love that we men should have for our sisters. I know that here in Western society, you know, even though they've been saying this is Women's Month, you know, I haven't seen any evidence of that. It is nothing special. You know, they haven't presented anything special. You know, because really, in Western society, they don't value women. And as a consequence, because we have been in that situation, many of us don't value our women. But as Africans, we understood the importance of the complementarity of men and women working together. And so I have a deep admiration and love for sisters. I always have and truly always will. So what's been happening with you? I know you've been traveling the world.
Yes. I have. I've been trying to keep well. Well, first, good afternoon to your listeners. It's great to be on your program again. Thank you so very much for the invitation. I'm grateful. Always a pleasure to be in your presence, now by voice. Okay. But what's been going on with me? I have done some travels lately this year alone. I've been to Ghana, and I just came back from the Gambia, West Africa, and so already it's been a pretty full year. I was in Europe as well, but I think for the scope of the program, you would prefer to focus on the African continent. But we can talk about the African presence in Europe, too. I did a lot of diaspora work when I lived in Europe between the years of 2004 and 2014.
Where did you live in Europe? Where did you live at that time in Europe? What countries?
I live primarily in Germany, but also in southern Spain, but mostly in Frankfurt, Germany, to be exact, or Bankfurt, as the city is known, because up till date now, it's the only city in the world where two central banks are headquartered, the European Central Bank and the German Central Bank, the Bundesbank.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's where I lived. I started, I was there as an exchange student studying global political economy at the University of Frankfurt. And then I stayed on to do a master's degree in international peace and conflict research with an emphasis on decolonization. But my background generally is in global political economy.
Mm-hmm. And see, that's interesting because I think one thing has become very clear, at least for me, definitely, but to many other Africans, that we Africans need our own economy. What the problems on the continent is because of colonization, which still happens, you know, and as a consequence, you know, that's why, what is the sister's name? She was a former ambassador. And who,
Dr. Arakana.
Yeah, Sister Arakana, yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, from Zimbabwe, Ghanaian national. She now resides here in Washington. She's the former ambassador to the to the African Union representing the U.S., who unfortunately and very unfairly was ousted in a pretty degrading way. But she's a good friend of mine. I'm still in close contact with her. I've worked with her extensively here in Washington, D.C., also in West Africa,
but you talk about a powerhouse. I mean, we want to celebrate Women's Month. She is a definite figure who should be exalted because of her fearless, courageous work that she's done is, I mean, invaluable for waking the sleeping masses, stitching together the diaspora here in the United States, helping us to recognize that we too are a part of the African Union, the current iteration of the Organization of African Unity. I mean, I tell her all the time, she's really the one of the manifestations of Malcolm's sacrifice and vision. Of course, he erected this OAAU in parallel to the OAU in the 60s. When African nations were, you know, newly fought and won their independence, the Organization of African or Afro-American Unity. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, his life was tragically abbreviated right when that really was taking off the ground and having an impact. So what she's done in contemporary times, I mean, I've witnessed the awe of it up close and personal. It's really to be celebrated and supported and protected because of her wealth of information and her, I mean, when I say wealth of information, I mean inside information, mm-hmm. And her willingness to leave that protective bubble of bureaucracy and diplomacy in the upper echelon. She, you know, pounds the pavement where the people are. She's a target. Yeah. And we have to protect her, envelop her, protect her, and keep her safe so she can continue her important work and enlist new, I don't like to use the language of war, but we are in a war.
Right.
But, so I'll say enlist new foot soldiers to keep the front fortified. Yeah.
Because I've been really impressed.
Yeah, I can't. Go ahead. Sorry.
I've been very impressed with her. And I remember seeing her on YouTube and talking about the colonization, the consistent colonization of the African mind and the African continent. Mm-hmm. You know, where you have leadership that is neocolonialist leadership that is desperate. There is no way in hell, I'm sorry, there is no way in hell that African leadership should not look at the unification of Africa, what Dr. Kwame Nkrumah talked about, what Patrice Lumumba talked about, what Dr. Shingata Diop talked about. All of them understood that we cannot be individual dealing with this European. Mm-hmm. And the European understood it because he became unified with the European Union, you know?
Yeah.
And so I know that she has an organization, the African Diaspora Development Institute. And I would love to contact, or you can contact her for me to have her on this program, because I would love to have her and talked with her.
Sure.
Because I was very impressed with the sister and what she was proposing. And we need that at this time. It is critical. Just like the when I was in D.C. attending the African Federalist Movement, of which you were there as well, you know.
That's
And we're talking about having our conference here in Atlanta in October, and I hope that transpires. But more importantly, to have the worldwide conference in, I believe, in Addis Ababa next year. Mm-hmm. And it's critical because when you talk about all those who are still in Africa and the weak leadership in Africa, you're talking about the Chinese talking about bringing 100 million people, establishing 100 million people in Africa. And then when you also talk about the Europeans that are still there, the Americans who are still there, you know, the Indians who are still there. And I could go on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so.
Yeah.
And the fact is that they're all there. But where we are at there in their countries, we are treated like garbage. We are treated like dirt. Yeah. We are disrespected. Yeah. But yet in Africa, we don't treat people that way. But we need not that it's not
against our nature.
Right. It's not our nature. But we don't necessarily need to treat them that way. But what we need to do is have them leave. Everybody's got to leave. We need a 10-year moratorium on nobody up in Africa but Africans, and to build Africa. And once we're ready, we're back open for business. You want something that Africa has? Because everybody does. We have more mineral wealth than any continent on the planet. That's why really
combined.
That's why we're not a poor people. We're poor in our thinking because of colonialism, because of racism, the imposition of those things, but we're not a poor people. We sit on the resources that Dr. Clark says, as I say in my closing, every program, that we have everything that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in the hell don't want to pay for it. But we have it. And so, therefore, when we control it in the way that we should, now we're open for business. You want this? You will pay a fair market price. You want some land in Africa? You will pay a dear price. Because Africa is for Africans. As Marcus Garvey said, Africa for Africans at home and abroad. And that's where we need to move. You know?
Well, you really highlighted a paradox in this geopolitical position we're in now with the African Union versus the European Union, and the trajectory, the progression that the European nations took towards integration. When I say integration, I mean into convergence of nations and currencies and markets and labor forces, etc., versus the suppression of that, which we're seeing very prolifically, pervasively, and brutally in Africa. I have been a long student now of European economics, have a few degrees in it. Like I said, I lived over there. I was working at the European Central Bank, the German Central Bank, and witnessed the support from the West, including the United States, for integrated markets, integrated infrastructure, integrated government, a favorable trade position for European nations. The promotion towards the European Union since 1946, you know, after the conclusion of the Second World War in 1945, it's something that had robust U.S. support. And I remember studying charts when I was living in Germany, looking at their experiencing their futuristic infrastructure compared to ours, and how that was financed with U.S. tax dollars. Mm-hmm. You study the affairs of the American embassy over there, huge American consulates. They all lend avid, unwavering support to the European Union.
Sure.
And has bolstered it to the position it is today. Now, when you contrast that with the push for African unification since, as you said, Kwame Nkrumah, you see a stark and egregious contrast. I mean, the figures you mentioned, Patrice Lumumba, Kwame Nkrumah, the list goes on
and
on.
With our Thomas Sankara. There's
up
a whole
until
bunch
contemporary time.
Exactly.
So when we talk about the weaknesses of Africa, it's not for lack of trying without powerful figures who have pushed for that. It's just that they, as we've seen with our freedom fighters here, whether we talk about Malcolm, Martin, Marcus Garvey, and so many others, if your aim runs contrast to the benefits of this system of forced white supremacy, then they assassinate you and they abbreviate and suppress and eliminate you in any way that they can. So there is that hypocrisy, that paradox. We do have progress, though, to applaud, as late coming as it is. You've seen this recent implementation of the African Continental Free Trade Area, this agreement that has come about, ratified last year with the Secretariat, being established in Ghana, very symbolically, because it was the seat of Kwame Nkrumah and the Big Six, who fought for independence from the British and won it as the first sub-Saharan African nation to do so.
But now, is that just for the West, or is that also goes into Central Africa and Southern Africa?
All of Africa.
All of Africa.
55 states. From my understanding, the only nation that has yet to sign on is Eritrea, I believe. Last I checked, there were 54 nations
signed on. So even the northern nations? Mm-hmm. Even the northern nations, Egypt, Libya, Algeria, Mauritania, Morocco. Okay.
Yeah,
I wasn't aware.
From Tunisia down to South Africa, from Somalia on over to what's the westernmost state is Senegal, Dakar, okay. Senegal, the westernmost point of Africa. Well, that's mm-hmm. not really fair. Continental Africa, you got Cape Verde and all of that. But all of them is what I'm trying to say would be included. And so Nigeria was holding out for understandable reasons, but through negotiations, they've agreed to join. To the chagrin of the U.S.
Okay.
And also to Europe, there were very enthusiastic and optimistic talks about having a continental-wide currency similar to that of the euro.
Yes.
Unfortunately, those negotiations, I believe, have stalled because of the compromises and unfavorable demands. The Francophone, I don't like dividing them into colonistic terms, but that's what they basically, the former French colonies, the Francophone nations, some of them, like I think it was Ivory Coast,
Cote d'Ivoire,
said that they, the CFA, the colonial French franc area.
Mm-hmm.
They are having some difficulty harmonizing their countries and currency with the terms of that of like Ghana, who want to take a much more liberated financial position from the holdings in the European banks and in, you know, the of France specifically.
Mm-hmm.
But still, the spirit is there. The infrastructure is taking place. Last I was in Ghana, I saw the building being constructed, rehabilitated for this symbolic secretariat that's being built. So we're moving in that direction. Of course, we have regional integration and regional currencies.
Right.
Like, I mean, we mentioned that one of the CFA, you have like the ECOWAS, the Economic Community of West African States, that are harmonizing and standardizing their infrastructure and other things, tolls and border systems and such. Mm-hmm. So there is movement in that direction, using the European Union as a rough model, but the pace of it
is slow.
It's disappointing, but compared to Europe, the African continent did not have as many roadblocks, obstacles, assassinations, undermining put in place.
Right.
So it's to be commended and applauded that in spite of all this opposition and suffocation that has come our way and still coming our way, that we are making progress in that direction. And there are some leaders, some heads of state who are staunchly committed to that vision, one of whom is the current president of Ghana, Nana Adudankwa Akufo-Addo is his name, staunch Garveyite, a very multifaceted man, but his spirit for Garveyism, Africa for the Africans, whether at home or abroad, has manifested in his policies, as we've seen with this year of return that swept through Ghana in 2019.
In fact, sister, was so successful in just as a practical sense that many other countries are now wanting to implement a return for at this time in various places. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct.
Because they've seen the economy. They've seen the economic benefit. Yeah.
Right, in tourism and trade and all of this. So if I can just give a little background information on how this year of return got started. In the United States Congress, there was a bill that was introduced through the House of Representatives, Congressman Bobby Scott of Virginia. It was a commemoration bill of when the first African captives reached the shores of Virginia in 1619. And a commission was to be established. Are you still there? My phone. Hello?
Hello, go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. My reception must be bad in this area. Excuse me. Bobby Scott's office, Congressman Bobby Scott, had generated a lot of support from his colleagues in the House of Representatives just for a commemoration bill, a commemoration commission for the 400th anniversary of when these captives reached Point Comfort, Virginia. But it stalled, and it was going nowhere in the Senate, so it was clear that it wouldn't be ratified. It was losing oxygen, and the risk of the year passing without this commission being established was very real, it seemed. So what the Republic of Ghana did to re-inject oxygen into the debate was the president issued an executive order, for the most part, a proclamation declaring for Ghana that 2019 would be the year of return. And in this proclamation, Virginia and enslavement in the U.S. was repeatedly mentioned. There was a huge public relations and promotions campaign open. The president of Ghana came to the United States here in Washington a couple of times to link with members of the Congressional Black Caucus and really kickstarted this effort of the bill that eventually was ratified into law, signed by the dude in the White House. And a lot of people are accrediting Trump for that, but let's be clear, whoever the president would be in year 2019
right.
would have signed it into law with this sort of upswell in demand from not just Africans in the U.S., but also heads of state in West Africa, particularly Ghana. So, it was a huge success. It broke all projected metrics. It forged so many new relationships. I mean, you know, people like us have been going to Africa for a long, long time.
Right.
But those who weren't particularly, I guess I could say, not just proud of their African heritage, but knowledgeable about it. You saw them making trips to Accra
right.
to experience that Ghanaian culture embraced.
Right, you've seen a number so-called stars or people in entertainment, athletes
right.
and so forth, making that trip and then making declarations such as, Steve Harvey and... what's in that?
Roland Martin.
Roland Martin, yeah.
Beyonce's mama and Boris Kudrow, who happens to be, his dad was Ghanaian, his mother's German. Dougie Fresh was over. I mean, so many people. I mean, it speaks to the really powerful promotion that happened in all segments of society. It wasn't just political or governmental or touristic. Mm-hmm. It came from the entertainment industry, came from the educators. Really was a full court press to make this a success. It's not without controversy, though. And like you said, there are now a number of other West African states who also are declaring their year of return. Primarily, but one factor is definitely the boost in revenue, the explosion in revenue that Ghana generated that has trickled down to the people when we talk about souvenir purchases, hoteliers,
restaurants,
taxi drivers, you name it. Mm-hmm. So it's not wealth that's just concentrated at the top. I mean, you really saw the utility of this manifesting positively among the Ghanaian people. There is, okay, so for example, I think it was August of 2019, I was invited to Accra through UNESCO, the United Nations Cultural Organization.
When was that when the Congressional Black Caucus went there and you saw Nancy Pelosi at, I believe.
So that was July.
Was that July? You know, yes. I'm like, man.
That was late July, yes. And, you know, originally the trip was to look much different than what materialized. But then the Speaker of the House wanted to, okay, let me just say it was originally a sole Congressional Black Caucus trip.
Okay.
Just for Black folk. But then Nancy Pelosi insisted on joining, thinking that that would amplify and elevate the message. So, of course, when the Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives comes aboard, then there are different security protocol that activated, and the agenda had to be
changed,
significantly modified, yeah. Because of security concerns,
right.
And that was to the dismay of a lot of the Ghanaians and the Americans, like grassroots folk, who were looking forward to directly engaging with members of the Congressional Black Caucus so they mm-hmm. could hear the concerns of the African diaspora and how mm-hmm. we can really work together to do some things that are pretty much ignored in U.S. Congress. So, but yeah, she was the Congressional Black Caucus delegation headed by Nancy Pelosi went over in July. And then in August, the United Nations had a forum at one of the universities in Ghana to explore the ethical implications of the Year of Return. Mm-hmm. And up to that point, I mean, we're talking 3/4 of the way through of the Year of Return, late August, enough time had elapsed to really evaluate that the focus was really being placed on tourism
mm-hmm.
and not reparations,
right.
From the standpoint of repairing ourselves with Africans who are descendants of the enslaved in the U.S., re-establishing connections with those in Ghana and talking about what happened in our Maafa.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't a lot of that sort of healing dialogue,
right.
Happening because it doesn't cost money. You know,
right.
You saw the commercialization or the monetization of a lot of our sites of mourning, like Elmina Castle, Jamestown Castle, and the fact that they call it a castle.
Exactly.
Exactly. Dungeon.
Exactly. In fact, I don't use the word castle. In fact, you know what?
No.
There's so many words, as far as I'm mm-hmm. concerned, that need to be looked at and changed, like slavery.
Yes.
We're not slaves.
Oh,
like, in fact,
no,
see,
no,
see,
no.
So that definitely comes into play, because I've never called the Elmina Dungeon or the Cape Coast Dungeon or the other dungeons
a castle
mm-hmm. because when you say
no.
a word castle, you get an image. That's supposed
fairy
to give you
tales.
Yes,
the imagery,
you know?
It connotes all sorts of
mm-hmm.
fantastic experiences. Really, they were torture cells of the worst kind.
Exactly.
And you know, you have Ghanaians who, like, I was speaking with a linguistic professor there who was trying to justify the usage of that word, going into the etymological history. And
there is none.
No. I mean, that may be able to be explained linguistically, but the harm that continues
right.
to do to our psyche by glossing over the absolute horror with this euphemism of castle, it can't
yeah.
be called that. So that was one of the things brought up in this forum at the Ghanaian University through this, you know, the United Nations.
Was Professor
the usage of the language, huh?
Was Professor Gambong a part of that? Brother Professor Gambong,
remember.
Do you know Professor Gambong in Ghana?
No, I could have been. I can't remember
okay.
the names of my fellow panelists.
Okay,
I
think
one,
he's in Kumasi.
One, huh?
I think he's in Kumasi.
Oh, Professor Gambong. No. Yeah. These were all Ghanaian or there was a professor from Brazil who had come. There was a the chief director of UNESCO's Root of the Enslaved project. He was there. His name is Dr. Ali Iye, originally mm-hmm. from Somalia, but now living in where UNESCO is headquartered in Paris.
Okay.
I was on the panel, and there was a woman professor also on the panel, but she's Ghanaian, but I don't remember her name.
Okay.
There were concerns about the sensationalization of our enslavement and making it the profit incentive that was woven into it by, for example, this is something that has always vexed me. In fact, it almost caused me to get arrested when I was at Gorée Island in Senegal.
Okay.
It really just shakes me to my core when I go to a site of enslavement to mourn and commune with my ancestors, and I'm told that I have to pay extra because I'm not an African.
Wow. See,
there's this pricing differential between Africans and non-Africans. You know, when you're called a tourist, that language of being called a tourist. So we're talking about castles and tourists. No, mm-hmm. we're not tourists. We are, you know, if you want to call it a Sankofa pilgrim.
Right.
Someone making we're returnees. A pilgrimage.
Yeah, because we're Africans. See,
So the sensitivity or the insensitivity of the language being used, and then, of course, now this isn't everyone, so I don't want to paint with a broad brush here, but you did see this price gouging and, you know, 10, 20-fold markups when people see mm-hmm. that we're so-called American based on our citizenship.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So these were
based on the citizenship, based on the citizenship and the perception that you got some money.
Oh my goodness. You really see the harm that Hollywood has done in these countries, and Hollywood and also the
media.
I mean, be careful what I say. The media, the record industry, particularly mm-hmm. with hip hop, R&B, promoting that. We're all over here living like Beyonce, Jay-Z, Iverson. We're millionaires, not realizing the concept of purchasing power parity and the fact that Africans, particularly those who are descendants of the enslaved, are faring worse off financially than any other group.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there are gleaming exceptions, but that concept is not really known. Or accepted in a lot of these African nations I've visited. In Europe, too, they mm-hmm. think that we're all wealthy.
Right.
So, these are false perceptions that need to be shattered. And this is why one of the factors that went into the determination for at least Ghana now declaring 2020, as the time to launch the initiative as beyond the return. That's not time sensitive, constrained to just 1 year.
Sure, good.
Because some of the feedback that the president and the Ministry of Tourism and Agriculture got from people who did answer the call and scrape together their Social Security nickels to go over there, to be called tourists, to be charged these exploitative prices, to see the division. Mm-hmm. And again, it's not everyone. A lot of people had very enriching and invaluable experiences, but there are measures that must be taken to go beyond just the economic benefit mm-hmm. and use this as an impetus for our reparations from the standpoint of self-healing and self-repair, so we can reassemble the diaspora and rise to our prominence that we've once held and will hold again.
Exactly, because mm-hmm. that's what must happen. But it would only happen, it can only happen if we embrace Pan-Africanism and cultural mm-hmm. unity. That's the only way. There is no other way.
Pan-Africanism or perish.
That's
absolutely
right.
That's my
mm-hmm. that's my motto. Pan-Africanism or perish.
Or perish.
Or unify or die. Unified.
Or die.
That's right.
It's the first in a month.
That's right. Yes, I got a caller here. He's been holding on. Let me get this caller, okay?
Oh, sure. Uh-huh.
646-646. Good afternoon.
What's happening, Oshi, to you and your guests? I hope y'all are both having a very good day.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, thank you.
My question to the sister is, you were speaking earlier in regards to the African currency and the direction that they were trying to go monetarily. And I was wondering, I know that the reason that these devils killed Gaddafi was because he was trying to turn the African continent into having one currency.
Backed by gold. Backed by gold. Mm-hmm.
Right.
With the gold to back it up. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so my question to you is, what is the direction that the continent is going now to get off of the tit of the IMF and the rest of them robber barons?
Robber barons, indeed. Well, a lot of those WhatsApp books, let me just say, I'm not a straight-up economist. I'm more of an anthropologist, so I'll do my best with this question. A lot of those West African nations are still dealing with the yoke of structural adjustment programs by the IMF and the World Bank. You talk about economic hitmen. There was the epicenter of the hit job, West Africa. The structural adjustment programs are phasing out now. I know for Ghana, the president has been very committed to never re-entering such exploitative economic conditions or contracts again.
And now, Hold on one second. Let me ask you this right quick, because this is the key thing to it. Now that the Ghanaian president is saying that he's not going to interact again with the IMF and those, are the other countries that control the IMF and manipulate with the IMF putting pressure on the Ghanaian people to get back in bed with IMF? And is the IMF in a position to make the Ghanaian people get back in bed with them? And what will the Ghanaian people do in regards to their economic sovereignty?
Well, I think that that allure is always there. But I know specifically for this president of Ghana, he's taken a much more nationalistic perspective. Even when he came here, there was a banner behind him when he spoke to his people that said Ghana first, and he was quoting Marcus Garvey. He was quoting all of these
outstanding
great African thinkers about how we need to do for self. And I'm paraphrasing, but he said it much more eloquently. So I'm sure that the trinkets are being jangled in their face to, like I said, tempt them to stay on board, like we see what's happening in the Francophone countries with Ivory Coast, especially Ivory Coast. I'll say that. I mean, this Africa Continental Free Trade Area, if you look at the obstacles and how those obstacles were surmounted, a lot of that came from the Ghanaian sense of sovereignty and self-determination that was really imbued in the policies that they were promoting. And it was in contrast to other countries who wanted to hang on to these colonial currencies and pegging this new eco, the currency name, to the euro. And Ghana said, oh no, hell no, we're not doing that. Other nations did too, but we're speaking about Ghana specifically. So that consciousness is there. It's a fine tightrope to walk because they've seen what has happened with their predecessors and cohorts in other nations when they've taken two so-called militant or radical of a stance economically, these sanctions that are slapped upon them, or planes being shot down from the sky like we saw in Mozambique and other places. So it's a fine balancing act. But like I said, I think the arc is moving in the right direction. And we need...
Now I was going to just ask you, do you think that the IMF and the boys have a coup set up in place to remove the president of the Ghanaian people if they don't go along with the program based on what you've said so far?
I'm sure they have that as one of their weapons in their arsenal, yes. Yeah.
Okay.
I definitely don't put it past them.
No, we don't put it. I mean, that's it.
I mean, you giving up. You know, the IMF, when they got you on their tip, man, they basically is one of the ways they're able to control the continent. I mean, that's what, you know, Gaddafi's so dangerous. And that's what makes that Barack Obama such a no good bastard to go along with it. And he should go down in history as the no good bastard that he really is, just based on the act that he did against African people in killing Gaddafi, regardless of what Gaddafi had done in the past or what he was about or his behavior or anything like that. Let's be clear. Mm-hmm. Gaddafi was trying to liberate African people. Economically.
Yes, I agree with that. And I mean, a lot of people criticize Gaddafi, and there are things there worth the criticism, you know, especially the antagonism from Arab Africa to sub-Saharan Africa. That is a real issue of Arab racism and even slavery, enslavement that's happening now.
Yes.
So that should be addressed, definitely, but not discounting his spirit of Pan-Africanism and his vision of unification. That should be examined separately. So I completely agree with you. The critique of Obama, I mean, he had his opportunity to speak on all of that. But of course, when he made his first visit back to Kenya, he was admonishing the head of state in a very condescending way about LGBTQXYZ.
You hit it on the head, sis.
Policies. Human rights, as
yes.
they called it. Of all the
Monkey
things he could have addressed, infrastructure,
syndrome.
Education, economics, he's trumpeting LGBTQ stuff, homosexualizing
the man. That's all it is. Monkey man, twisted sister.
All right, Jay. All right, Jay.
No, but it's real.
No,
It destroyed that progress. I mean, let's be honest. He was there maybe 6-7 years ago, and it's really hurt the direction. But thank God that the ancestors are governing over us, and they're trying to move us forward. And we got to move forward because of sisters like this who are aware and who's spreading the message. The greatest thing about sisters like this who go on the continent is they educate African people. They have dialogue with the indigenous African people that are there. They talk to them. They explain to them the dirty deeds of America and what they do and the other nations. So, sister, I embrace you. I thank you.
Thank you.
And listen, God speak to you, and may you
thank
be protected by the ancestors to continue to do your work. You
right
can
on.
Put me back
I thank
on
you so much.
Right on, Jay.
thank
right
you.
On.
Thank
All right,
you
brother.
So
thank
much.
You. Appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's important that we engage in this foot diplomacy with individuals separate from the State Department.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it brings to mind what the brother said of our work in Liberia, the repair work that is being done there between Africans in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
and Africans in Liberia with the indigenous folk there who basically were enslaved by so-called mulattoes.
Exactly.
The Americos who returned home.
Mm-hmm.
And I am someone who has a melanin deficient skin tone. I mean, they call it light skin or red bone, as my daddy's people say. But when I first went to Liberia as a Garveyite, an active Garveyite UNIA member, it was so heartbreaking in interacting with the indigenous Liberians, how at face value them seeing me as so-called light-skinned,
right,
and hearing that I'm American, immediately associated me with the oppressive Americo government that reigned terror over them for so many years.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, you know, when we went to the University of Liberia, we reactivated UNIA divisions in Liberia that had been suppressed for so long. And we had these massive gatherings where we talked about the very principle of colorism,
mm-hmm,
and the important distinction that must be made between so-called light-skinned Black people in the United States and the Americos of the Liberian history. And that would not have happened unless we put our boots on the ground over there and directly engaged with the grassroots people.
Great. That's beautiful. Yeah.
And not relied upon the State,
right,
Department and such. So that,
right,
history of the American Colonization Society, I mean, there's a wonderful museum in a place called Pocahontas Island, Virginia. It's wonderful that it's there.
Right. I think I saw you. I think I saw you there, and there's some pictures of you. I remember that.
Yes. I go down there quite a bit. It's right down by Nat Turner Land.
Right.
We go down there quite a bit.
Yeah.
So it's wonderful that the museum is there. The content is somewhat problematic and whitewashes over the history of how,
mm-hmm,
so-called mulattoes went back to liberate, you know, Liberia.
You're right. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people say, oh, Barack Obama was the first Black American president. No, not technically. If you want to talk about a black American who was president of a nation, that was Jenkins Roberts, who was the first president of Liberia. He was, mm-hmm, a Black man from the U.S.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But,
right,
the history is, it's a shame for
it is.
Us. And it's we talk about this reparations work that we must do with years of return and all of these campaigns from West African nations. I mean, Liberia, we're in negotiations with them now about maybe making that next and not focusing so much on the tourism and the partying and the commercialism.
Right. See,
but more so correcting the record and rewriting or unredacting the history of the Black American role over there and reinventing it.
See, that's what needs to happen, because Africans here in America had a European mindset when they went to, mm-hmm, Liberia and other parts of Africa. And the Africans, mm-hmm, on the continent, because you got to understand, the European understand clearly, I must continue to feed each side this negativity towards each other, the divide and conquer method. And it was very prevalent,
mm-hmm,
you know, throughout the African continent, to it is to this day. See, one of the things that the European understands is that in order for me to maintain my position and to control these people and to control the wealth of Africa, I got to keep them at each other. I got to keep them believing that, mm-hmm, somehow the American Africans are better than the continental Africans. Of course, that is, mm-hmm, not true. And all the other Africans in the diaspora. That's, mm-hmm, why I'm such a avid Pan-Africanist and such, mm-hmm, an avid believer for African people coming together as one Africa. You know, and getting all those divisions, all those boundaries, all of this madness to control the land that is under the feet, mm-hmm, of African people. It is vitally important, mm-hmm, that we move in that direction, that move in a mindset of that direction. You know, I know it's very problematic.
And a very hot topic now, going back to Liberia, is you talking about freeing the land and returning. So there were 1 million acres of land allocated to Marcus Garvey's returnees, not the American
right.
Colonization Society returnees, but Garveyite returnees. I believe it was 1919.
Okay.
That eventually was co-opted, undermined by the America government conspiring against Garvey, and it was given to corporate interest instead, to the Firestone Corporation.
Right, Firestone Corporation, yeah, rubber.
Mm-hmm. Yep. At five cents an acre for 99 years. Okay,
is it up now?
It's coming due. So last I was in Liberia, I actually snuck on to that so-called plantation, and I saw active slavery taking place by an American corporation, Firestone, headquartered in Ohio, active slavery or indentured servitude happening on that 1 million acres that was supposed to go to Garveyite settlement. And I talked to the local representatives there, and there was an extension granted. My suggestion to them was that they model the new lease, because they can't just throw out Firestone. Liberia doesn't have that power, unfortunately, as a sovereign nation. But maybe modeling the new lease after what you see in territories like Alaska, United Arab Emirates, Qatar, where there's mm-hmm. profit sharing amongst the people.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. That would be
good. You know
good.
How Alaskans, yeah. they get that check every year
right.
because of the oil drilling from, yeah, right. that there'll mm-hmm. be some profit sharing with all Liberians.
Right.
So see, they extended the lease. I think now, what's this, 2020? I think now it's up in year 2023. Something like this, but it's something that we in the U.S., particularly those Garveyites who are keen on this issue, need to be paying attention to.
Definitely.
Because it could result in some form of reparations to Garveyites or to Black Americans. I'm not really sure how mm-hmm. it'll materialize in the end, but it's something we need to keep our eyes and ears on.
See, the issue as far as I'm concerned is the continent in itself. And that's why I'm hoping that the African Federalist Movement and the movement towards a one African, a united African states has to become mm-hmm. a reality when you see the move mm-hmm. that the Chinese are making, what has been done by the Indians, the Arabs, the Caucasians, the Europeans, all of this. And mm-hmm. and that the image of Africa and Africans, particularly globally, is so bad, is so negative, that as Dr. Clark said, we have no friends. We have no friends. Everybody yeah. wants a piece of what we have. And it's come to the point because we have been degraded and demeaned so long. We don't want to be in Africa. Many Africans yeah. risk shark-infested waters, put up a lot of money in a lottery system so they could get out of Africa and come to Europe, come to the United States and so forth, not understanding and realizing where they are is the best place for them to be. But yet, because we don't control the image and the information of what happens on the continent, and we have neo-colonialist leaders, despots, ignorant individuals, tribalism, mysticism, materialism. So we have all of these factors that are preventing African people, and at a very key moment in world history, particularly in African history. There has to come a moment in time that Africa wakes up, that we wake up. And that's why I love the Sister Ambassador.
Yes. Awakening those sleeping giant. Well, the awakening is here, and we just have to keep it going.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Well, listen, I know I'm a little over, and I know you're busy, because you are. Believe me, I really thank you, Sister Azmira. This is Sister Azmira H. I hope to have you on the program again. I know you're in and out. You're in D.C. You're working in, you know, in Congress, and I know it's very serious time for because of the, you know, COVID-19 virus.
Yeah.
You know. So, yeah. But I.
Well,
thank
can
you.
I just say?
Sure, please.
Say, Oshi. I mean, your energy, your oratory skills, your legendary libations—they have all been an invaluable contribution to our community, whether that be our hometowns of Milwaukee, D.C., Atlanta, Africa. I love you, and I'm so grateful for the role you have served in my life and the lives of my needy peers. You are just a treasure, and I thank you for what you do. You keep up the great work, and I wish you longevity and, of course, liberation.
Ashe, my good sister, mm-hmm. Sister Asmira H., bless you. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. Not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and sure as hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, this has been a great program. I really want to thank my guests today and the issues that they've brought forth. I'll definitely be working with. Brothers and sisters, Shemhotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Brothers and sisters, Bibi Fahorie. Bibi Fahorie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will, not shall, we will be victorious. You have a blessed and wonderful weekend. Be safe and be careful out there. Peace, family.